I want to get this on this little tape here. It's Micah, Zephaniah, and the date is about 630 to 625 along that. Let's spend just a moment on the general overall background. Zephaniah deals with a world judgment. A judgment at that time that would include all the nations far and near. But if we look at the background, and back in the days of Micah, Assyria was a great dominant world power at that time. It continued to dominate the world for this 100 years. But by the time of Zephaniah, the power of the Assyrians was waning. Ashurbanipal was the last great king that they had, and the rest of them after that were very small and began to go down. But at any rate, there was a rising power in the east at that time, that is the Babylonian power. Now, Babylon was about 225 miles south of Nineveh, the capital of Assyria. Nabopolassar became the king of the Babylonian empire, Babylonian power, really Chaldea. Babylon was the capital of Chaldea. He became the king somewhere around 625. And Nebuchadnezzar was his son, and the great the great military leader of his army. So you have Nabopolassar and Nebuchadnezzar, his son. The Babylonians began preparation to overthrow the Assyrians. And so in about 625, they began that preparation. About 612, Nebuchadnezzar took the army and moved northward 225 miles to attack the city and did destroy. He destroyed Assyria. The remnant of the Assyrian army moved westward to Carchemish, Haran, close to Carchemish. And Nebuchadnezzar got his army oriented together again after that, after destroying Nineveh. He pursued the Assyrians and met them, and in 609, he destroyed the remnant of the Assyrian army. Now that left the Babylonians in power to the north. Now, how does that affect our country down south, Judah? Now remember, Israel had been carried away into captivity in 722. So that left Judah and Jerusalem as its capital for 135 years afterward, before they were destroyed. But here's the point I want to make. During this time, from Hezekiah on to Josiah, you didn't have really a good king in Judah. But Josiah was a good king. He was on a par with Hezekiah in many ways. What happened was, when he heard that Babylonians were attacking the Assyrians, he thought anybody would be better than Assyria. So when Pharaoh Necho, and I wish I had a map here so you could see all this, a lot better here. Over here was Assyria, over here in this country here. And as you come down to the coastline over here, here we have Jerusalem here, here's Judah here. And up here, you have the Tigris, Euphrates River coming down here. And it comes on down over here. Now, here was Haran, of Carchemish and Haran, up here about here. Now, Pharaoh Necho took his army and started up here to help the Assyrians against the Babylonians. Josiah took his army, and up here at Megiddo, that about here, he met Necho in a battle there and was killed. That was in 609. He was killed about that time, 698, along one or the other there. And Josiah was killed. Now, Josiah had started a great reformation in Judah. But his reformation was more external. He was destroying the idols that had been established. He was destroying the altars that had been set up. He was doing all of that. Now, you have three or four prophets about the same time. You have Jeremiah, the great prophet of that period. You have Zephaniah and Nahum and Habakkuk. You have these four men who were prophets. Then you had a woman who was a prophet, Huldah, the prophetess. Now during this time, Josiah had them rebuild or renovate the temple. Now in the temple they found a copy of the law. They'd gone all of Egypt probably from Manasseh, without really a copy of their law, depending then on the memory of the priests to teach them, and they didn't teach them very much. When they found this copy of the law, they brought it to Josiah and read it in his presence. He was a young man at that time. But it terrified him to realize what God had said he would do to the nation if they did not, if they turned away from him to idolatry. So he sent these men under Huldah, the prophetess. Now, as I said, I don't know why he didn't send the men to Jeremiah, or why he didn't send the men to Zephaniah, or Nahum, or Habakkuk. I don't know. But he sent the men with a copy of the law to Huldah, the prophetess. Now, you may be familiar with this history, you may not. All of this is back in the Kings and Chronicles and the prophets. So it's Old Testament history. All right, so at any rate, he was starting this reformation. But now here's the point. While he was conducting this reformation, all of that is external. You are not going to have a reformation in this country or a restoration of original principles that conducted until you change the hearts of the people. Now, our responsibility, the work of the church is not political. The work of the church is spiritual. Our job is to work on the hearts, while if we ever get any honorable men in our government, anywhere from Tucson, clear on up to Washington, if we ever get any honorable men in there, all they can do is pass laws and enforce laws externally. Our job is to change the hearts of the people. That's why I'm not, don't take an over a lot of interest in politics. I'm interested in it. I know that that's not going to accomplish anything. Josiah's reformation accomplished practically nothing. Jeremiah working on the hearts, he didn't accomplish much. Now let me come back now. All right, so Josiah, this good man, as the king came up here to meet the Babylonian, here was Babylon down here. We come up here to Syria, was over here, rather. Here's Nineveh over here. He had come up here, destroyed Nineveh, took his army, come over here, and we're destroying the remnant of the army at Haran. That's just a few miles from Carchemish. And the final decisive battle was here at Carchemish, where he defeated Pharaoh Necho. Then Nebuchadnezzar came on down south, pursued Nebuchadnezzar down here, and was taking the towns of Judah. Now, when he came to Jerusalem, he learned that his foe, Colossus, was preparing, and he was prophesying what was going to take place. Now, if we can keep this background in mind, it'll help us to understand Zedekiah and what he was talking about. That Zedekiah is foretelling a world judgment. Now, God's going to use the Babylonians as the Old Testament, and it is. There is not a breath of cool, fresh air in it. There are no flowers, there's no greenery, there's none of these things. It's all salt pits and fire and destruction throughout. The prophecy of a terrible judgment, but of course they didn't pay much attention to it. Right, now with that kind of a background, here you've got Assyria being destroyed by Babylon. Babylon pursuing, coming on down to the south here. Oh yeah, I wanted to say this also. When Nebuchadnezzar went back to Babylon, he took Daniel with him. Daniel and his three friends were taken back at that time. Now, in 597, he came back in 597 and took another group back when the king rebelled against him. He took another group back, and this time he had Ezekiel back here. So now you've got two prophets back in that country. I pointed that out when we studied Ezekiel, that you've got two prophets over here at that time. Now, Daniel is a prophet to the king, to the rulers there. He was Nebuchadnezzar and Cyrus, who followed later. Ezekiel was the prophet to the people. He was trying to get these people, and then he came back then, at this time took Ezekiel and 10,000 others as hostages back there, or prisoners or slaves, whatever you want to call them. Now, what Ezekiel was doing, he was trying to prepare these people for the fall of Jerusalem that took place in 586. 586, he came back and destroyed the city of Jerusalem and carried away the whole group captive back here. Well, Ezekiel was getting ready for that. Now, all of that's going to come a little later. You see, we're a little ahead of that. But I'm getting that before us, so that when we look at what took place here, I mean, what Zephaniah says here, we understand now what's going to take place. Then we'll watch that as we come to the next prophets, see what took place. I guess that's enough of the background. I'll talk a long time about it, but all I want us to see is the upheaval, the world upheaval at that time. And now then, this world upheaval led to the dominating power of Babylon, the defeat of Assyria, which was the dominating power back in the days of Isaiah and Micah. That's what they were fighting at that time. Now, the very fact that Micah and Assyria carried away Israel into captivity, 722. Right? Now, what we're trying to say is, back there, Isaiah and Micah were prophesying in the days of the great Assyrian power, and they were able to turn enough hearts back to God in Judah. God spared Judah for another 135 years, from 722 to 587 or 6, or something like that. Right? And so, now then, they become so wicked, Judah has become more wicked, really, than Israel was, so now they're going to be destroyed. They'll be carried into Babylonian captivity. All right, now turn with me now to Zephaniah, and let us note now what he said. It's interesting here, in this, so the teaching of the book was that of a universal judgment. It would come on the whole world at that time. Isaiah foretold that also, but it didn't all come in Isaiah's day, but much of it came in Zephaniah's day, a little later. All right, the word of Jehovah, which came unto Zephaniah, the son of Cushai, the son of Gedaliah, the son of Amariah, the son of Hezekiah, in the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah. Now, you can see he's a great-grandson of Hezekiah. Therefore, Zephaniah is of royal blood, the great-grandson of Hezekiah, that good king. He's just one of my favorites. I think he's one of the best kings that Judah ever had, really, in many ways. David was a more outstanding man. But Hezekiah was one of the best men. That Josiah was a good one also. He was good also. Now notice now, you have this, I will. I think I counted 11 times. God said, I will. Not I will. That's expression of determination. That's what God had determined he's going to do. Now notice what he's going to do. Now the first part of this prophecy is the judgment here upon the whole world, with Judah in particular. Now here's Judah, you see down here. Here's Jerusalem, here, and here's Judah just about here at that time. All right, but it's a prophecy primarily against the whole world, but Judah and Jerusalem in particular. Now notice what it says, I will utterly consume all things from off the face of the earth ground, saith Jehovah. I will consume man and beast. I will consume the birds of the heavens and the fishes of the sea and the stumbling blocks with wicked. Now the stumbling blocks would be the idols. Those are the stumbling blocks to Judah and Israel, and God's going to destroy them. In other words, this is going to be a judgment that will affect all. Now God's judgments generally affect the world of nature as well as man. And he's going to do it this time. And sometimes the judgment is a form of a drought, sometimes it's a flood, sometimes it's something else. But the animals also suffer along with these droughts and so on there. So it's going to be universal. Now that's what I will consume. And then notice the next. And I will cut off man from off the face of the ground, saith Jehovah. Doesn't mean everybody, but it'll be a terrible destruction of human life in this judgment that God is going to bring. Now, sometimes people get a little squeamish when you talk about God bringing a judgment like this. All of these judgments of God express the righteousness of God, God's judicial wrath. The wrath of God is not an outburst of temper like it would be of me or you. It's a judicial wrath. It's a wrath against the wickedness of man, against the rebellion against God, against idolatry and things of that kind. Right? So God says, I will cut off man from off the face of the ground, set you over again, and I will stretch out my hand upon Judah and upon all the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So, although it's a world judgment, it's going to be especially directed against Judah and Jerusalem. Now, the hand, you see it so often in the Old Testament, the hand is a symbol of power. When God says, I'll raise my hand, or I'll extend my hand, it may extend his hand to save, or it may extend his hand in destruction. But the hand is a symbol of power and the exercise of power. Right? And I will cut off the remnant of Baal from this place, and the name of the Chimerim with the priests. Now, the remnant of Baal, that is those who worship Baal. Now, those who are you going to cut off? You have about five or six different groups we're going to cut off. We're going to cut off the remnant of Baal, those idols to Baal that remained in the city after Josiah had destroyed so many of them. He didn't get all of them. God's going to cut off the remnant of them, those that are left from Josiah's reformatory movement. God said, I'm going to cut off. Now, know the next group of Baal from the place, and the Chimerim. Now, the Chimerim were the priests of Baal. You have that word two or three times in the Old Testament. It's the priests of Baal, the false gods, the no gods, as the gods called them. All right? And the priests, now that would be the priests of Jehovah, who had been faithless under that charge. So I'm going to cut off the Baals. I'm going to cut off the priests of Baal. I'm going to cut off the priests upon the temple that did not do their work, but yielded unto the wickedness of the day. God will cut them all off. All right, now notice further. And them that worship the hosts of heaven from the housetops. All right, now these are your idolaters. Rather interesting, strange, isn't it? From the very beginning, way back in the early dawn of history, why man worshiped the sun and the moon and the stars. Before the sun as the major god, and the moon as the goddess, the wife of God, and the little stars out there as representing deity or some aspect of deity. And they worship them. A person today who looks gets up and picks up his paper and turns to the astrology section of it to see what the astrology says of today, he's not a thing on earth but another star worshiper. The stars don't have anything to do with what's going to happen to me today. They're creatures of God, inanimate, out in space. God is in control. Not the stars, not the planets. Now, they may affect nature. I don't know the extent to which they do, but they may affect nature. They don't affect my destiny or yours. So the astrologers of today are not a thing on earth but idolaters, just as they were back there. Always worship the sun, the moon, and the stars, man had. Remember Job says that he pronounced a curse upon himself, if I have kissed my hand toward the moon. Now that would be an act of worship or homage toward the moon. So he denied that he ever did anything like that, for he'd been true to God. All right, so here you have three now, and the Baal worship the Chimerim, and the priest. Now he moves on to say, and now second, the next group, them that worship the host of heaven from the housetops. Now remember, the housetops were flat. And you go up on the housetop there, and they would have a little altar there, and they felt like the air was pure, and they were closer to the star and all that. So there they would burn the incense or whatever they offered unto the stars of heaven. And that was idolatry. That's what God said, we'll cut them off, the star worshippers. Now further, and them that worship that swear to Jehovah and swear by Malcolm. Now Malcolm, that was the god of the Moabites. Now here were individuals whose hearts were divided. They swore to Jehovah, but they swore by Malcolm. And God says, I'm going to cut them off. So an individual today that swears by the Lord, but and at the same time is swearing by something else in his mind, is a divided fellow. A fellow is divided in his affections, divided between his worship. Jesus said, no man can worship two masters. He will love the one and hate the other, hold the one, despise the other. You cannot serve God in mammon. Mammon was an old Persian word for wealth. So you can't worship God and worship the creature wealth at the same time. Can't carry one on one shoulder and the other on the other. Now, a lot of folks today talk about God, all of that. God bless you and worship all that. Really, they're worshiping something else that exactly in the same category these were. That's what brought the destruction back yonder. Our false religion, our false life, our false standards of today will bring the destruction to this nation, maybe in your day and mine, maybe not. Not, it'll bring it eventually. And all this further. And then, here's another group, and them that are turned back from following Jehovah. Now that's the one that quit the Lord. They turned back. They were apostatized and turned back from serving the Lord. I tell you right now, our brethren have the idea that you got to kind of play around serving God and be out of duty and in duty and out of duty and let a meeting come on, get back in duty and get out of duty again. Well, that's no good with God. get in there and stay in there, those fellows turned back and followed him, I said, I'm going to cut them off. I remember I had a fellow down at Abilene when I was preaching there. Every time I ever saw him, he'd come forward. Finally, last time he came forward, I just was disgusted with it. And I made a statement, now this brother needs help. He'd been coming forward, and let's help him to stay in this time and not get out and back in and out all the time. And of course, that's no good with God. I wanted to say, one of these times when he comes forward, I ought to take a hammer and knock him in the head so he can go on to heaven, because next week he'll be back where he was anyhow. I never did say that. I wanted to real bad. One that I hadn't back in those days. But sometimes, that kind of a fellow, why, back and forth, in and out, ought to knock him in the head when he comes in, and so he can go on to heaven at that time, you see, before he gets back out again. But I didn't say it. As I recall, I didn't. I know I thought it, but I don't think I said that. All right. Now notice, before turning back from following Jehovah, and those that have not sought Jehovah, nor inquired after him. Now those are indifferent ones. They don't care. They don't seek him. They don't turn. They're indifferent. I think that's the thing that's killing more people spiritually today than anything else, is total indifference. It's all right. It's all right if you don't want to worship God. It's all right if you don't want to worship God. It's all right if God does it or doesn't. I'm indifferent to it all. Indifference is a thing that's the hardest thing to meet of all that you have to meet in trying to convert people. And you take your New Testament, the enemies of Christ, and those who were for him and against him. Then there was that great body that was indifferent. He couldn't reach them, nobody else could. They were lukewarm, indifferent. Well, all right, so that's the crowd now that is, the judgment is going to be against. It's a world judgment, you can see. Now moving on from that, hold thy peace at the presence of the Lord Jehovah, for the day of Jehovah is at hand. Now, hold your peace. That means when you're in the presence of God, you remember back in Habakkuk, let all the earth, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the world keep silence before him. Well, this is a similar statement to that. In the presence of Jehovah, stand in awe of him and his greatness and who he is. Always hold him in the highest of reverence and degree of reverence. But now notice he says that the day of Jehovah is at hand. Now we've had that over and over in our study of the prophets. The day of Jehovah is always a day of judgment against the wicked. But that judgment against the wicked will be a day of deliverance for the righteous. So it's both a day of destruction and a day of deliverance. Destruction to the wicked, but delivers the righteous from that which was oppressing them by the wicked. See? So it's a day of deliverance and a day of judgment. The day of the Lord, or the day of Jehovah, is at hand here. For the day of Jehovah is at hand, that is close by, ready to be executed. For Jehovah hath prepared his sacrifice. He hath consecrated his guest. That is, he's going to call the world to witness his judgment. The whole world will witness the judgment. He executes here against the wicked in Jerusalem and Judah, and then extends that judgment out to include others. So he called them now to witness it. You have the same thing back in Hosea, wasn't it? Where he called upon them to see his judgment. And it shall come to pass in the day of Jehovah's sacrifice that I will punish the princes and the king's sons and all such as are clothed with foreign apparel. That's another thing God didn't like. All those kings and princes, they clothed themselves with foreign apparel, aligning themselves to foreign nations, to foreign kingdoms and foreign gods, and all of that. Now God said, I'm going to execute my judgment upon them, upon the king, upon the king's sons, and the princes there. They would be the men in high office there who are clothed in foreign apparel. They clothe themselves not only physically, but clothe themselves in the God or the character and the life of the foreigners and not God's people. And that when the church does that, comes under the same wrath and condemnation of God. When the church clothes itself in all of these things that's clothing itself in these days, instead of the righteousness in Jesus Christ, God is going to execute judgment against these individuals. You can't clothe ourselves in this worldliness and all that and carry on like the world does. I got a whole page from Abilene paper, a fellow sent me. One of the elders there, of one congregation, they'd gotten so liberal, he left and started another one. He brought in the piano and the banjos and the guitars and the drums and all that. And also they're having dances and expressing biblical ideas by the dances. Can you imagine a church of the Lord going that far? Right, now what are they clothing themselves with? They're clothing themselves with foreign apparel. Foreign below all that hoopla with your bands and all that. All your dancers there. What's the difference between that and the world? They say it's an expression. I suspect the elder will be on the front seat when they have those dances, probably. They can get there before the preacher does. They'll be right there, you see, to see those, all that going on. That's foreign apparel. That's going to call that kind of a church God going to spew it out of his mouth. I don't care, you can say, you can argue as long as you want to that, but they're doing a lot of good. I don't know what they're doing. I know what the paper says they're doing, and this man's the one that told them about it. It's a quotation from him, having those dances and all that, to expressing the biblical idea. Well, what biblical idea could you express by a dance? I've been trying to figure it out. You might go on the warpath there, end the advance on the warpath there, but man, we're going on the warpath here against sin, then I can do that. Now, what's a different kind of dance? Well, I'll leave that for you. I wish I'd brought that paper along, read you a little out of that, but it didn't. Maybe that's where you don't know it. All right, now notice further. Now he says the king's sons and clothed, and in that day I was Jehovah. Now this is still some more in that day, the day of Jehovah. And in that day, said Jehovah, there shall be the noise of a cry from the fish gate, and a wailing from the second quarter, and a great crashing from the hills. Now these are two gates in the walls of the city. The fish gate was at the northeast, and this other gate was, I think, further west than that. And in the hills, it may mean the hills in the city, or it may be the surrounding hills here, as they too are destroyed. Probably the surrounding hills, though some think it was in the hills of the city. But at any rate, the point is here, we get the point anyway. There'll be a great cry from the fish gate in the second quarter. Now the second quarter of the missionary was a place where they did business. So here there'll be a business area. So there'll be a great cry there as their business is destroyed in there. Their city is destroyed. Like over in Los Angeles, they're burning it down. All right, now wail you inhabitants of Matpesh. That's the mortar there, another one of the... Now that's the section where they... The soul, bought and sold, that was the economic or selling part of it. For all the people of Canaan are undone, all they that were laden with silver are cut off. Now what the word Canaan meant a trafficker. And I think the word Canaan here is not talking about Canaanites out there that were still existing at that time, but it's the traffickers who are dealing in silver among the Jews. That they have become, just like Hosea said, they have become Canaanites. That in that traffic, Hosea said this, about that same thing. So Zephaniah is simply using the same expression there of God's people that are acting like Canaanites in the trafficking and selling and all of that. But a great cry is going to ascend from that section because of the destruction of the city. So it's a judgment that just gets everything. Religious, social, economic, political, the whole thing. God's going to judge the whole business there. Now there's another, I will. And it shall come to pass at that time that I will search Jerusalem with lamps. And I will punish the men that are settled on their leaves and say in their heart, Jehovah will not do good, neither will he do evil. Now let's look at those three individuals. I will at that time pass... I will pass through Jerusalem with lamps. Now what does that mean? I'm going to search it out and find every individual in the city. When this judgment comes, it'll be searched out as you search back in the recesses of a house there with a lamp to see if there's anybody there. I'm going to search them out with lamps. Second, he says here, and I will punish the men that are settled on their leaves. Now that's an expression that Jeremiah used a time or two. What does it mean? Well, in making wine, you put the grape juice in this. Well, that was settled in the bottom there. Right? Now then, if you left the wine on the lees too long, then that spoiled the quality of it. So now these individuals are settled on their lees. They become syrupy. They become no good, spoiled, rotten. So God said, those that are settled on their lees are destroyed. Well, I think that's a good expression. I don't know anything about wine making, except what I read about it. But we get this idea here. And so people who come settled on that, in an indifferent attitude, I'm satisfied, a satisfied attitude. Well, God said, I'm going to pull them off. God wants us to be satisfied, content with what we have. I think God wants us never to be satisfied. I try to make that a rule of life. Don't ever become satisfied. I'm content. If that's the best I can do, I'll be content with it. And I'm going to try to do better. I'm going to try to teach a better class next time, try to do a better job, preach a better sermon, whatever it is. Don't ever be satisfied with that whereunto you've attained. But let's be content with it, and then try to do better. I think there's a great difference between being satisfied and being content. The Bible teaches contentment. You don't become so satisfied, you settle on your leaves, and they become spoiled or rotten. They're not any good anymore. All right, now he moves on here, settle on the leaves, and those say in their heart that God will not do good or evil. God's not going to do anything about it. And listen, folks, God is in history all the time. God's working in history now. God said, I set up over the kingdom whomsoever I will, even the lowest of men. God still does that. Jesus is the King of kings, Lord of lords. He's the ruler of the kings of the earth. He's all of that. And so he's still ruling. God's in our, I don't know what God's working out today. He's working out something today. Maybe entirely different way I do it. I'm sure it is. Maybe different way you do it. I've made up my mind. I'm going to take it like God sends it. So whatever he sends, Democrat, Republican, Independent, Socialist, whatever you may want to send, I'll take that, go on and realize God's going to do something with it. I'm going to work out something there. All right? And their wealth shall become a spoil, and their houses a desolation. Now that's these wealthy people. Their wealth will be a spoil to the conquerors, and their houses a desolation. Yea, they shall build houses, but shall not inhabit them. And they shall plant vineyards, but shall not drink the wine thereof. Now they'll build a house. Now here we're building a nice house. Here we're settled for keeps from now on here. But here comes this army and destroy it. They'll build a house, but not live in it. They'll plant a vineyard, but before they've had time to make for it to develop them and for them to drink the wine, it belonged to somebody else. So the judgment was at hand. The day of Jehovah was at hand. What difference did it make, though, if you really pay attention to it? It looks to me like if anybody can read the signs of the times, that he'd see that today something is about to happen to this nation. $4 trillion debt, something like that, maybe just three, maybe two, I don't know. Either one of them, I can't imagine either one of them, so it doesn't matter. That kind of a debt, moral situation, depraved morals, homes are being wrecked, divorce is prevalent, immorality, living envy, as they talk about and all that. When you got a nation built on that kind of thing, and who can you believe anymore? I don't know. Some few, yeah. When you got a situation like that, something's going to happen. It got to happen. Now, what's it going to be? I wouldn't try to declare that. I wouldn't try to prophesy that. I can just tell you that knowing the Bible and knowing God, knowing what God's done all through history, I can say with utmost confidence so within that length of time, something is going to happen. Now, you keep that in mind now. Just remember, he's not talking about us, but he's talking about, yes, he is talking about everybody. These are principles by which God operates. That's what we're trying to say. We'll move on then. The great day of Jehovah is near. It is near and hasteneth greatly. Even the voice of the day of Jehovah. In other words, you can hear him heralding it. Their children, their wives, their homes, they failed in it. The mighty man is weeping bitterly because he failed to do what he thought he was going to do. God was in control. God was in control. That day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, a day of wasteness and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness. Now just read those couplets there together. It's a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress. Now here's the wrath expressed, a day of trouble and distress, a day of wasteness and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness. Now just read those. Four couplets there. Read those over several times there. Try to get the picture there. Try to think of yourself in that city at that time. This is what you have. This is what you're faced with there. Now, let me finish up this if I can. A day of the trumpet and a day of alarm against the fortified cities and against the high battlements. Now, those are the towers on the corners of the walls. And I will bring distress upon men that they shall walk like blind men, because they have sinned against Jehovah, and their blood shall be poured out as dust, and their flesh is dung. Neither thy silver nor thy gold shall be able to deliver them, but the whole land shall be devoured by the fire of his jealousy. For he will make an end, yea, a terrible end, of all them that dwell in the land. What a prophecy. What a prophecy. Sometime today before you go to bed tonight, while it's still on your mind, go back and read this chapter. Read it over. Think what he was saying to those people then. What kind of parallel do you have between that condition and ours today? I, Jehovah, change not, God said. If God doesn't change, he will act on the same basic principles today he acted back there in that day. We'll take the next chapter next time. Maybe we'll take two of them. Try to finish the little book next time. Take the next two chapters next time. We appreciate having our visitors with us this morning. We hope this will be the beginning of many visits like this. We're glad to have you.